Welcome to Kin Folklore. We're so glad to be back. And after 2 years of eager anticipation, we're here to discuss season two of The Witcher, now available for streaming on Netflix. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar: The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, and uncovered the secrets of Lovecraft Country. You can find our season one coverage of The Witcher in your podcast feed.
This week, we'll find out what happened to Yennefer after the Battle of Sudden Hill, meet up with the elves, finally see Kaer Morhen, and fight a Lushan in episodes 1 and 2.
And what a welcome sight to be back and having adult content. If you're here for a little late night makeout sesh with a Bruxa, or hard to shake images of an overly friendly rock troll, you have come to the right place. Tip your bard and control your chaos, and let's see where the night takes us.
So in episode 1, A Grain of Truth, Geralt and Ciri go back to the battlefield of Sodden Hill, where they find Taseya, who is also searching for Yennefer. Taseya informs Geralt that Yen didn't make it through the battle, and Ciri notes that she's seen this interaction before, in a dream.
I mean, Taseya probably saw it too, when she was looking at the minds of multiple motherfuckers as she just touched them. Like, she's like touching them and seeing into their souls and the whole battle. How many ways can you watch somebody die? I don't know. Ask Taseya. She watched multiple
that little skill. That little skill is used in the game. And yeah, it's like a very traumatizing quest. Oh. Like, what is going on right now? Are we talking to dead people? This is really not like it was a lot.
Yo, the one that got me the worst was the freaking guy who like actually made the kill, survived everything, and then the poor fucker was just on the ground and a horse like just stepped on him. I was like, oh, tough look, bro. Sucks.
Yeah, the battle was brutal. Mm-hmm. Even after, you know, Yen used her fire magic to basically end it, it was still really, really terrible. So back at Aretusa, Vilgefortz Artorias and Taseya save the lives of Trisk Marigold and a bunch of the other mages who were hurt in the battle. Yeah. Taseya decides that in order to get information about what Nilfgaard's plans are, that she's going to have to torture Cahir, the Black Knight.
I mean, are we here for this? Are we not here for this?
I'm totally fine with it. Yeah, I mean, torture is always bad. I just want to be clear that I'm against torture in the real world. I'm just saying Taseya is upset. Cahir is a terrible person. And, you know, I'm not really upset right now. It's fine with me. Geralt and Ciri keep moving, and they end up at the home of Nevillian, Geralt's old friend, who has changed a bit since they saw each other last.
As in, he became a beast.
Yeah. I mean, straight up looks like Beast from Beauty and the Beast. Nevillian doesn't want to tell him how he came to be cursed, but eventually he admits that he trashed the temple of the lion-headed spider and was cursed to live life as a beast alone for the rest of his days by one of the priestesses. The only thing that will end the curse is love and blood. But not only does Nevillian not want to tell them about his curse, he has another secret. Hmm. He's, living with a Bruxa, which is a vampire. No big deal.
I mean, and getting
small,
a little
minor
bit,
detail.
A little late night blood sucking, a little late night, you know, it's a weird like kind of situation, but sometimes you got to go through these things. It's complicated. It's complicated, you know?
Yeah, no big deal. Her name is Verena. He found her in the forest. She was close to death. And because he can't die, Verena feeds on him occasionally. And, you know, she's having a little trouble containing her thirst. And then she turns on all of the locals. So just a tiny secret. No big deal.
No, not like she didn't just murder a whole family in the beginning of the opening of this whole show, like just for fun. Wow. Anyway, but yeah, no, it's wild. I mean, it's actually, I like him, the way he's putting on, but you can tell there's something weird going on underneath the surface, for sure.
Yeah. So Verena is actually very kind to Ciri, and she's interested in her. But when Geralt finds out that his friend is sheltering Abruxa, he takes action and fights Verena to the death in a very, very cool fight scene.
Yeah.
Slaying Verena breaks the curse and returns Nivellyn to his human form. And he admits that the curse was not because he destroyed the temple, but because he raped the priestess. Mm. Geralt and Ciri turn their backs to him and leave. And even in his human form, he's a monster to them. Yen is very much alive, despite what everyone believes back at Aretusa. And she's in Fringilla's custody. Franny's back, y'all.
Franny! Yes! And lumped up and all. Lumped up. But she's here.
She's a little, you know, they're both a little bit, like, roughed up after the battle.
Yes.
So with a few of Nilfgaard's soldiers, Fringilla's intention is to take Yen back to Nilfgaard, and you know, by the end of the episode, that plan is thwarted because they're ambushed in the forest, and that's how the episode ends.
Yeah, what an ending. Goodness, you don't know what's happening. And Yen and Frangilla actually were captured by elves, including Philivandril, the former, not current, the former king of the elves, and they're taken to their new leader, Francesca. They've both been having dreams that feature a hooded woman. Francesca appears to also be having similar dreams when they find a temple and secret passage under some ruins. Do I do it? Do I just talk about another fucking secret tunnel in another fucking show? Secret tunnel.
Secret tunnel.
Anyway, moving on. So, the three mages investigate the inscription, which says, "Behold, the mother of the forest, the deathless mother, nesting in dreams." They follow a secret passage through the forest and end up in a hut with no doors. Francesca says the incantation, and all three have visions. Francesca sees Illithine, an elven prophet, and Frangilla sees a mare, and Yennefer sees a young girl. Francesca is promised a child and freedom for her people. Frangilla is promised power, and Yen is promised her magic back. When they awake, Francesca and Frangilla join forces. The elves will go with Nilfgaard, and Yen heads back to Aretusa. Geralt and Ciri reach Kaer Morhen, where we receive a warm welcome, and Ciri receives a skeptical one. He tells her each winter, fewer witchers return home. There's like fewer, like as in 20. It's kind of, man, do you see how hard this has been for witchers in general? We talked about that in the first season, and now we see it a little bit clearer.
Yeah, I mean, he says last time he counted there were 20, but yeah, when they get inside, I would say, what, there's maybe 15?
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Their numbers are really reducing.
100%. And this is where we meet a character that many gamers will love and book readers. We meet Vesemir. We also meet Lambert, and eventually we meet Eskel. Eskel looks a bit rough. He met with a leshy in the woods and defeated it after 6 hours, and he was also wounded. That night, while Geralt is teaching Ciri how to make a potion, the other witchers decide to have some fun with a few women from the local brothel, including Danica from season 1. Eskel goes off with one of the women, and three branches begin to grow out of his shoulder wound. He turns into a leshy and kills her. Eventually, all witchers realize that something is going wrong with their friend, and their medallions start to vibrate. They have to fight their brother, Eskel. And it's a, you know, it's a little bit tough call because they seem to not want to, obviously they don't want to harm him. Geralt has to eventually kill Eskel when he attacks and almost kills Vesemir. Geralt takes Ciri outside and begins to train her to fight.
Whew, so a lot happened in these two episodes. Let's talk about some of the stuff we didn't include in the summary. Like, there's like a lot of nods to season 1, which I truly appreciated.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to hear Ciri say, "Mousak told me of a hedgehog man." who was cured by true love. He's burying the lead here a little bit. Like, you mean your dad? Like, that would be...
Yeah. Like, like, I mean, she clearly didn't know anything about Geralt, right? It's a surprise to her.
Yeah.
When Calanth tells her about it, and she is clearly in the dark about it because she asked Geralt about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know... She says, I have some questions. And how did I become your child's surprise? She doesn't really get it. So I thought it was interesting that Mousak told her the story of her life, right? Which was, mm-hmm. you know, for us, that was episode 4 of season 1,
mm-hmm.
the story of how her parents came to be together, how her father was cursed and the curse was broken, but left out the valuable details that Geralt, you know, fills in for her.
Yeah, and I think it's fair that Ciri's a little bit apprehensive to open up to different people because everyone's giving her little pieces of her story, but nobody's really giving her the full story of how all this is happening. So I think, like, she's trying to figure out, okay, especially after what she went through getting and escaping Syntra, who can I really trust, you know, here? So I think it's she's still feeling out, even though she feels like she can trust Geralt, she feels like she can trust some of the things that people she's encountering. I think she's still figuring out what's going on here for real, you know?
Yeah, and I think that it's really important that when, you know, she asked Geralt about the Child of Surprise stuff, that he's honest with her.
Mm-hmm.
That I saved your father's life, and she says, from who? Your grandmother. He doesn't hold back. He doesn't. It's really a testament to his character. He very rarely will shield people from the truth. Like, he's always very direct with people. Well, not always, but many times he's very direct with people. And I think that the fact that he's willing to be direct with her helps her start to trust him right away.
Agreed.
And then I also want to call out, you know, like the fact that Danica was in this episode. Mm. You know, she was the woman that he was with at the beginning of the episode with the Striga, which I think was the same episode. Was that episode 4? No, I think that was episode 3 of season 1. But you know, I thought it was cool that she was in this episode. They got the actress to come back. I also thought it was funny that Geralt was like, who?
He was like, oh yeah,
He was basically like the Mariah Carey, I don't know her.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. Hilarious. So what about Tessa's ability to see the fallen soldier's last moments? We talked about it a little bit in the summary, but man, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's a power that I think we see a couple of powers in these two episodes that we didn't really know that Tessaia or any mage had before.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that she can recall the final moments of a dead soldier just speaks to her ability to manipulate minds and see things. And I think that she, you know, we know that she, when she goes to see Kahir, she basically reaches into his brain.
Mm-hmm.
It might be some foreshadowing for powers that we're going to see again. But I think it was interesting to see her do that. I was like a little shocked. And I think it's funny that Vilgefortz, like, you can look at every soldier on this field, you're not going to find Yen. Yeah. I was like, how do you know, bruh?
Yeah, because he was out here being a double agent last season. Are
we going to talk about this?
Yeah, okay. I'm like...
I am old enough to remember when we were like, wait, is this guy on their side or not?
Exactly.
Like, what is going on with him?
I think he's all about power. He's seeing the power play. Like, he was definitely working the inside track to get... I mean, look at the power position he's in right now in comparison to everything else. So creating dissension amongst the ranks of those people and then coming across like he's on their side, he's trying to display in a power play. I mean, I have some awareness of what else is going on with him that I won't speak about because it would be too much of a spoiler, but I do think he's I think he's like playing the power game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I actually fully expected to start this season with him being with Nilfgaard. So I was really surprised to see him taking on a leadership position with the Brotherhood.
Nilfgaard is playing chess while a lot of people are still playing checkers, like, for sure. Like, I think...
Well, is it Nilfgaard that's playing chess? Okay, so I don't want to get into too much of spoiler territory here, because we don't want to... We're covering episodes 1 and 2. We're going to cover each, you know, all of this whole season, we're going to cover episodes in twos. But someone is playing chess.
Yes.
I don't know if it's Nilfgaard.
Fair enough. Fair enough with what you're saying. I get where you're saying, why you're saying that. And you guys will get why we're saying that later on. And we're going to, you know, we'll move into other things. But yeah, there is a chess game afoot. And there are pieces being moved around to meet the will of the people who are playing that game.
Yeah, totally. So, I don't know if Villefort is part of that, but he's sus. Okay, yeah. The man is sus. I don't trust him.
Yeah, he's definitely sus.
The whole thing is sus.
He's definitely sus. There's no question. I mean, like, he was out here turning on people last time, just a minute ago. It was crazy. So maybe it's the end of days.
I've lived through a whole dark age and 3 supposed end of days. It's all horseshit.
Best take ever. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I was like,
word, girl, word.
It's so good. Like, it's so good.
As we record this from, what is this, the 4th coronavirus wave? Like,
oh, God.
I hear you, girl.
It is back. Yes. Stronger than ever. Like it never left, you know? Back like it never left. But yes, this is a real telling thing. Like, he's lived a long time. He's seen a lot of different things. And it's kind of telling that he's like unmoved by people saying something is afoot in like the way things are moving in the world and things are changing. And I kind of think the villain's using this a little bit to move to there's like, it's like serving double purpose here. It's like giving us information, but it's also trying to distract Geralt from the fact of what's happening in the house and that he's hiding the Bruxa and that he's like, doesn't want him to know. But I think like it's an interesting take. And he says something else here. He says that, you know, he mentions the Wild Hunt. You're a game player, so do you want to, you know, mention anything about the nod about the Wild Hunt?
Yeah, so I think we should definitely talk more in a later episode about the Wild Hunt, but game players will definitely know the name of the third Witcher game is, you know, Wild Hunt. Like, the Wild Hunt is, I don't want to give too much away, but it's a force. Like it's not like a, you know, a bunch of lords and ladies who go hunting like in Downton Abbey. It is a force that becomes a serious threat to this world. So we will talk more about the Wild Hunt because there are more nods to the Wild Hunt. It came up twice, actually, in the early episodes. But I think we should wait for a later episode to talk more about the Wild Hunt.
So we're not going to, speaking of the game, we're not going to talk about the sign here, the new sign. We got a new sign.
Yeah, so I don't think Geralt's ever used Axie before, which is the calming sign. Mm-hmm. Very useful in the game because it works on people as well as horses. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He uses it to calm down Roach, but it also works on people sometimes. I think what we've seen for the most part from season one is Ard. That seems to be the sign that he uses the most. You know, we may have seen... Yeah, I feel like there's some dispute over in the Striga episode if he's using any of the other ones, but I think Ard is the main one that he used in season one. He uses it a lot in this season as well. And then we also get to see him, you know, start to make a potion from the Leshy, which is something that, actually not from the Leshy, from... Is it, yeah, he does use the Leshy.
Yeah, it was from the Leshy. Yep.
That's something that he does in the game, right? After he... you know, kills a monster, he'll pick up and scavenge whatever he can, and then he uses the remains to make various potions. So I just thought that was like a nice touch here to actually show him making one. You don't actually get to see him making them in the game. They yeah. just kind of get mixed. But yeah, I thought that was nice. I also thought that there were some really... I just want to say overall that this season does a really good job of dropping hints and nods to other stories or to the history. And it's... really, it's a lot of it is stuff you pick up on the rewatch, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. this is a show that people will naturally binge. Every episode is really action-packed or plot-packed, and you kind of just want to get to the next. But there's some really subtle, interesting stuff happening in the dialogue. And mm-hmm. so Nevillian tells a story about the fall of the elders to Ciri, and it's actually the story of Ciri's ancestors.
Yeah.
So that story will come back again without getting too much into detail. But it's I just thought it was really nice that like he's telling this story about this elven warrior and this human mage and how they came together. We talked about this in our previous season.
Mm-hmm.
Ciri is part of their story, and we'll talk about more how she's part of their story.
Yeah. I love that. I love that story. I love when we were talking about it last in the spoiler episode. We hinted at it a little bit before throughout the season. But yeah, there's like a lot here that actually unfolds a little bit, you know, from what we've seen so far in the, you know, the season. Interestingly, there's some interesting reasons why that I think that would be brought up. So anyway, I think it's a really cool story. I love the way they weave that into the dialogue as well. As well as one of the things that I think was also kind of interesting in that same elk was the fact that there were no pure-blooded elves that have been born in decades. Like, I mean, there's a conversation that kind of is coming up about that with Francesca, and mm-hmm. And what do you think about that? I mean, I didn't know that coming into this episode.
Yeah, I think that's new information we didn't have. So decades seems like a long time, although elves do age slowly. But Dara is a child when we meet him.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty certain that Dara is a pure, like I hate to say, you know, pureborn. It sounds like something from the books that we shall not name. But both his parents are elves. He's 100% elf. Like, let's put it that way. So I think that, you know, either Dara ages quite slowly or, you know, there's something that's a little out of joint here, but I did not have this information either. We knew that elves were declining in population because mm-hmm. we know that Calanthe basically had a lot of them murdered. You know, yeah. Like Dara calls out Ciri on the fact that her grandmother oversaw the systematic murder of his people. Mm-hmm. We also know that that when we first meet Philodendron, he tells Geralt that their numbers are very depleted, that they lost all of their land. Mm-hmm. So this is shocking to me and very sad if you think about it, yeah. that there's, you know, very few elven babies that are being born. It's very like this whole thing is just giving me all of these horrible thoughts about like basically this is a genocide of their people. Like they're being forced out of their land, they're being slaughtered when they refuse to go. Because they're so poorly resourced, they're not able to have children. Like, it's a really sad situation
100%
for them. And we'll talk more about the history of the elves at the end of this episode.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, these episodes really do help you to see that portion that was only hinted at in season one. about the kind of genocide. I mean, not hinted at. Hinted is the wrong word. I mean, he says it, what's going on to them. You see Calanthe come back from a war in which she's like kind of like boasting about her, what she's done to different elves and armies. And but it's really interesting to see this played out like in our own eyes in the story, to see like all the elves, see them on the move militarily, to see like, you know, that there's still a real strong power within them to do things. Like, look, I mean, Francesca like took Frangilla was like out like right away. Like she like snapped her fingers and she was gone. You know what I mean? Like going to sleep. So they're very powerful still. And it shows us also that this is the second population that we're seeing dwindling in numbers, right? The Witchers are dwindling in their numbers, and we're also seeing the elves dwindle their numbers. And one thing I thought that was interesting was how Vesemir kind of tells Ciri, gives some history also in regards to like, since the conjunction of the spheres, you know, what happened with Witchers and how the first Witcher was killed by a demon who had been there since the conjunction. Leshes have been around since the conjunction and cannot be reproduced. Lots of talk about the conjunction of the spheres in this episode. And, you know, I guess we're going to talk later about, you know, the mentioning of Blood Origin, the spinoff show. But what do you think about all this? What do you think about, like, the fact that, like, both these populations are dwindling? And it seems like it's, like, not... It's been happening since the conjunction of the spheres is like a marked event, right?
Yeah. So we don't know that much from this show about the conjunction of the spheres yet. We'll learn some more this season. I think they actually have told us more about it in these two episodes than in the previous season. Mm-hmm. From the elves were on the continent before the conjunction of the spheres, and the humans, they believe, came through the conjunction of the spheres because their own world was destroyed. Mm-hmm. So it isn't impossible for those who weren't here before to reproduce, because the human population is much larger than any of the elder races' population. But there's definitely something about being outside of an environment that you can thrive in. And I think that for the elves, it's partially that they lost their land to the humans and that they are unable to thrive because they're, you know, when we first met Philavandriel, he was starving. Mm-hmm. They had a Sylvan stealing food for them because he felt sorry for them because they were starving. Yeah. So I think that part of the reason that their population is reducing is just lack of resources. Mm. But I also thought it was interesting that it was noted that this demon that the first Witcher was killed by is like, it's one of a kind. Like, there's no other, because they believe that it only landed here because of the conjunction of the spheres. And also that Leshies are very small in their numbers as well, because they also, you know, probably are outside of their environment. Mm. So I think it's something we should definitely keep an eye on, because I think it's important. But I'm really hyped, actually, with all this talk about Blood Origin, because I think that show is entirely going to focus on this moment in history.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's really, really exciting. Yeah, because we've spoken previously last season and definitely in a spoiler episode about the conjunction of the spheres and like just our own knowledge. And that's exciting to think that, hey, we may get like a whole kind of like spinoff prequel, maybe possible thing that shows us more of this history, which is cool.
I'm not sure if it's just going to focus on that, but it appears that it's going to take us to at least close to that time.
Yeah.
When the humans first arrived, or when the elves were really, this was their planet, this was their continent.
Yeah, no, I love it. I really, really love it. And speaking of Witchers struggling, one Witcher in particular is having a little bit of a hard time being a parent. He's talking to Roach about getting teenagers to open up, and then he's drinking heavily with his friends. And he's, you know, trying to, you know, He's meditating before telling her about herself. It's super, I gotta say, I felt him. I felt him deeply. Yeah.
I thought you would appreciate that.
Yes. Yeah.
I do not have teenagers, but I felt like it was true parenting. Like,
oh my gosh. I mean, you do like talk to an anime
like
object.
When he's meditating right before he's like, when I tell you to run, you run.
That's the part I felt the most. He's like, when I tell you to run, you run. When I tell you to like hide, you hide. What the fuck are you doing out here? Like, what? This I couldn't have felt him more in that moment. I mean, because let's be honest. All right, you texted me and told me Siri is out of order this season so far. Okay, listen. This is just crazy.
She's actually quite a lot. You know, I'll give her a pass because Siri has been through some horrible stuff. But I'm just like, out the gate, she's talking back to Geralt, making fun of him, just like not listening to him when he tells her to do something.
Yeah.
As I said, I don't have teenagers, but I felt like I was talking to one of my friends.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
when he took that deep breath.
The deep breath? Because when he's saying that, one of the reasons he's telling all this is, what the fuck was she thinking? He's like, yo, this is a dangerous, dangerous monster. And she's all like running up on Verena.
Verena.
Oh no, are you okay? And Verena like picks her up like, I'm going to fucking eat you. Like, I'm going to eat you alive. Who, by the way, speaking of them like battling, what do you think about Siri and Verena with a like versus battle? Like a little versus, get Swizzy and Timbo on the phone and see if they can have a sing-off because Verena's got pipes.
Scream. Her scream took Geralt out. Like, she knocked the Witcher on his ass. Like, man. I was like, I wonder if Siri's scream would do the same.
Oh my God. Well, to be fair about who I think goes out on top, Siri's scream did like freaking split the freaking earth and like
it's
do
true.
All kinds of crazy shit. So
it's true. All Verena just knocked Geralt back. But
exactly.
Yeah, I was like, woof, this woman has pipes.
Oh my gosh. So let's go back to Yennefer and Franny a little bit. You know, Yennefer really is calling Frangilla out on her bullshit. And Frangilla, touche, calls Yen out on hers. And I think their conversation is really interesting because as mages, their choices are limited in this conflict. You know, you can choose to be a pawn of the Brotherhood, or you can choose, as Frangilla does, to be a pawn of the king that you've been assigned to, or, you know, in the kingdom that you went to. It puts Yen's decision into clearer context by choosing another path. That, like, Yen herself has kind of decided, hey, I'm not choosing either. I'm going to do my own fucking thing. Like, I'm not good with the king you guys gave me. I think the Brotherhood is bullshit. But I think Yen chooses to, you know, bet on herself. And she's really, I think she's struggling a little bit with that choice somewhat this season so far of, like, not really betting on herself, but that, like, she's chosen, tried to choose love. She's tried to choose power. She's tried to choose fun. She's chosen a lot of things. But what is it amounting to right now for her?
I mean, Yen, let's just put Yen's life in perspective to this point. When she followed the rules, she ended up being assigned to a kingdom that was in decline, which was Nilfgaard. And she said, nope, I'm not going there. I want to go to Irden. And she chose her own path and she made it happen. Of course, that was bad for Nilfgaard because, you know, look what happened to them. But or maybe good. If you're looking at it from Nilfgaard's point of view, they probably feel like they're stronger than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Frangilla was the person they needed. Then when she came back to fight with the mages in the Brotherhood, it Taseya's, because Vilgefort told her that Taseya wanted her to be there. Mm-hmm. And then once she was there, Taseya asked her to join the cause. Now she's struggling because she doesn't have her magic. So striking out on her own, right? This conversation she has with Fringilla happens before, you know, she has the visions and all that before they're caught. But like, her larger story, it makes sense that being on her own is the only way forward for her. She doesn't trust the Brotherhood. She doesn't trust authority. She only trusts herself. Mm-hmm. And I'm not always sure that Yen even trusts herself. But I did think this conversation was great because Yen is very confident in telling Fringilla, like, you're a pawn. But Fringilla is like, okay, so whatever, you fought for the Brotherhood, and where did that get you?
Yeah.
Are they coming for you? Like, are they coming for you? Like, what does that get you? Now you're in my custody. And so I thought this was a great back and forth between them. Ultimately, where I land is, I think Yen is right, that her diagnosis of the situation is appropriate and that she makes sense here. But it does give her pause when Fringilla tells her, like, well, how did helping the Brotherhood help you?
Yeah, and I think that Yen didn't go into that fight of it, like, so gung-ho about helping the Brotherhood. You know, she was kind of out on the plans. She didn't know that, she thought that they were obvious plans. She unwillingly went along and only became the hero out of necessity. Like, it was like kind of like in that last moment that she did a lot of heroic things throughout the battle of Sodden Hill. But I thought like, as they were on their way there, she was kind of like, she was clowning their ass. She was like, yeah, you guys are ridiculous. Like, this is bullshit. Like, why are you going to make this be your plan? Like, I thought that was, from what I remember of that scene, she was always kind of out on Vilgefort, which kind of makes me happy.
Yeah. I mean, she her instinct was not to help them. She helped them because she allowed her emotions to cloud her instinct. And that's a regular issue of Yen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, she often will do the thing that in the show, I don't want to speak for Yen in the books. I don't want Sloane coming after me. shout out to Witcher expert Sloane. But like, in this show, Yen, usually when she trusts her instincts, those instincts are for self-preservation, for survival. But in the show, whenever she gets too emotionally attached, or, you know, she makes a choice that's emotional, it never really works out in her benefit. And that's true of her relationship with Geralt as well. You know, like, they are the two extremely flawed people who essentially every time they get together tear each other apart, and her instinct is to leave him in the dust, but she keeps ending up going towards him. So yeah, we'll see where that leads this season. But
now, is that because she wants to, or is that because of the djinn? I'm just saying. No, I'm joking.
I mean, that's a question, right? Yeah. Is it the last wish that he made, or is it because they actually are destined to be together? The dragon told them that they were destined to be together.
Oh, you were talking about the djinn. I was talking about like too much djinn, like they drank too much djinn. Like that. No, I'm playing.
But like, he also noted that even though they're meant for each other, they probably shouldn't be together. Yeah, so
no, 100%.
I thought this conversation was a nice way of putting Yen's actions into a larger context of her world, which is that she's never going to play by the rules. She's never going to be a pawn for anyone. And when she does play by their rules, it never helps her. So yeah. More power to my girl, Yen.
Yeah, we love her. We love her. She is a pod favorite for sure. So let's talk about some of the history we mentioned earlier. Lessons from Oxenfurt Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So the history of the elves on the continent is that they arrived approximately 2,500 years before humans, and most likely portaled from another world. When the humans arrived, the elves didn't see them as hostile and decided that rather than fighting in a war, they would continue to flee east. During this time, they abandoned many of their cities, including Xintria, which is now present-day Sintra, Ciri's home. Eventually, they signed a peace treaty with the humans, but the peace only lasted a few years because the northern kingdom of Redania attacked. The war began and the humans won, forcing the elves further east. The slaughter of elves continues in the northern kingdom, and though they have tried to fight back many times, the humans have the advantage of numbers. Elves live long lives, but do not reproduce as quickly as humans, and as Yen mentioned to Philivandrel, there haven't been many pure elves born in decades. Also, while she was kind of like, you know, talking to him about a song that he was mentioned in, and he was like, oh, you know, the bard. He's so nice. Anyway.
And we also want to talk a little bit about the attack on Kaer Morhen, the one that is mentioned multiple times about why there's so few witchers. So Kaer Morhen is a fortress castle that used to be the home of the witchers trained in the School of the Wolf. Many years before this story, when Geralt was a boy, the local villagers attacked the fortress, killing nearly everyone inside. The witchers, the young students, the mages who oversaw the mutations. And in the books, without willing mages, the school was no longer able to create new witchers. And it became the home base for the remaining witchers of the School of the Wolf. So this is where they come, as they said, every winter to kind of like rest and you know, recoup after fighting monsters all year.
Yeah, really cool. Really cool backstory on them. So what I think the theme and what we think the theme of this episodes it's really asking us a question, is what is a monster? So a major theme of the show is what makes one a monster. In episode one, the villain reveals that he killed his household staff after he became a beast, saying monsters are born from deeds done. He believes himself to be a monster because of his actions, not just because of the curse and the way that he looks. Ciri is willing to forgive this, as turning into a beast was not his fault. However, when it's revealed that the villain's first monstrous act came when he was a human, she and Geralt turn their backs on him and walk away. In this story, being a monster is all about perspective. Geralt is called the Butcher of Blaviken by those who saw him slaughter all of Renfri's men. Most people who know about Cirilla's powers believe her to be a monster too. Verena calls out these contradictions when Ciri tells her monsters do bad things to people. Verena replies, humans do bad things to everybody. Eskel is transformed also into a monster against his will, and he pays the ultimate price for it with his life. But Eskel did not choose to become a Leshen, and his story is a tragedy. In this story, there are so many different things that you can see from a different perspective, and there are no easy choices. And we judge people by the context of their decisions and actions, not just their appearance or what they have been forced to become. This theme in the series serves as a foreshadowing for the rest of the season. There will be multiple threats to Geralt and Ciri. Some of them will be magical, otherworldly forces, and some of them will be human. But how do we give perspective in your mind, Andrea, to what that means as far as like how we define monsters?
I mean, I think that you nailed it in the preview episode when you talked about how the story from the first episode is really about choices. I think that there's going to be a lot of hard choices in front of the main characters this season. But I think the main one is really like Ciri's choice, right? Ciri is extremely powerful. We're kind of learning more about her powers all the time. So for instance, that montage that was sort of at the end of season one, where Taseya and Geralt are both screaming for Yen, that always felt odd and out of place in the episode. And it wasn't clear to me really 100% that was actually Ciri having a vision, that she's able to call, see the future. Mm-hmm. She's able to see these visions. And I think that she's quite powerful. I mean, we know that she is, and that her power can be quite dangerous. So what she chooses to do with that power, how she chooses to move forward, I think is going to be a major theme this season. Geralt's made his choice, right? We know that his choice was to get his child a surprise mm-hmm. and protect her. Mm. So his choices aren't in question. But I think we're going to see more hard choices come up for both him and Yen. And so I think what we should just keep an eye on as viewers is what choices do they make? And, you know, Ciri and Yen both are powerful, although Yen doesn't have her powers right now. Mm-hmm. But how do they use that? How do they use their powers? How do they use their relationships? What choices do they make as people? And sometimes, you know, I think every character on this continent has to make choices that may seem monstrous. There are characters who will make choices that we don't understand, that are born of pain and suffering. But I think that the context is always what matters. And I think that's what these first couple of episodes are trying to tell us. Esko wasn't a bad guy, right? He was a person who tried to fight a monster, got hurt by the monster, and that monster was able to infect him somehow, which is still unclear. That doesn't mean that Eskel himself was a monster. He didn't choose that path, but Nevillian did choose his mm-hmm. path as a human to do something really horrible, and he paid the price for it. And just because he regrets it later doesn't make it any less monstrous.
Yeah, we're defined by our choices. Like, you know, he alludes to that, and then in what you're just saying, I totally, totally agree. And I think that Geralt is trying to prepare Ciri for that burden of being a person who must choose, like, your path. Like, and, you know, even in one of the things when, you know, Ciri's speaking about why she wants to learn how to fight, because she wants to be able to take revenge against the people who, you know, killed her family and took her and took Syntra. And, you know, Geralt gives his first lesson. You know, we don't kill out of fear. We kill to save lives. And he actually models it, because he would not have killed Eskel had he not seen that Eskel was about to kill Vesemir. And in that moment, he knew there was no other choice but to kill Eskel to save Vesemir. So he was showing him, I mean, even though Ciri doesn't see it, it's showing us as the viewers that this is a code that you know, he lives by. Once again, here's Geralt, like, modeling his own code in his actions, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't hesitate to kill the Bruxa, though, so.
Yeah.
He was like, she gotta go.
I mean, but do you think he thought that he was saving Nevillian's life? Because when he does it, he doesn't know the story about Nevillian doing what he did. He does it beforehand, right? Maybe he thinks he's being
protected. I think all witchers are trained to kind of to get a sense of a situation quickly. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen this from him several times, like when they encountered the Sylvan, the Striga. He's putting the pieces together and trying to understand what the context of this curse or this monster is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's legendary that he didn't kill Dooney when Calanthe asked him to. Like, he didn't want to hurt Dooney off the bat because he saw that he had been cursed. And so I think that he kind of assessed the situation. Remember, they arrived to the town. It's a town Geralt's been to many times before. It's completely deserted. He's walking around, securing the perimeter, and realizing that this is a Bruxa who is openly killing. And then when he goes to confront his friend about it, he sees the Bruxa feeding on his friend. In my opinion, Geralt didn't really have much of a choice. You know, Verena had to go. Like, there was only a matter of time before she probably would have fed on Ciri, and he wasn't going to let that happen.
Yeah, 110%. And I thought it was pretty cool for reading this story, and the way that it opens up in the book is kind of like Geralt walking through this field of people who have been, you know, killed, and realizing that it isn't an animal that did this, that it's, you know, something. And I thought it was pretty cool to see the scene of the family, if, you know, Abruxa killing a whole family is cool, but not in the sense of like seeing that, but just to see what it was before he actually shows up, to then him seeing what's going on in the town being deserted. I thought that was a pretty good like stroke of the showrunners kind of getting a little meta of like setting up for us what was happening rather than just dumping us in the story. And I thought they wove the story really into it, because obviously Ciri's not, you know, we talked about this in the preview episode. Would Ciri be with him, or would this be a flashback? So it's not a flashback. They're not doing a lot of time hijinks so far in what I've seen. And so it's pretty interesting to see that they added Ciri into the story, and that part of his motivation may have been to protect her, and how they wove that piece of it into the timeline where we are was pretty well done, I thought. So,
yeah, I agree. And I kind of liked Verena. Like, she kind of felt sorry for her. Like, yeah, okay, she's a vampire. It's not, maybe this is my soft softness for vampire. From the Vampire Diaries.
I know. This is a running thing with not only you, but people who listen to the pod telling me, I'm just full disclosure, I have never seen the Vampire Diaries, and this has been a problem for some of the fans in our fandom.
But, you know, I sympathize with her a little bit. I could tell she didn't want to hurt Ciri. She was interested in her. She was interested in her because she was different. She said, you're one of a kind, not one of many. Yeah. That said, she had to go. Like, let's be honest. Like, she had to go. Like, Geralt could not responsibly leave this Bruxa there. But I thought it kind of sets the tone for the season. This was a tragic love story. Nevillian loved Verena, and she loved him, but they were both monsters in some way. And so I thought that it was like a great way of sort of doing the monster of the week thing that they did last season, but also setting the tone of like, what is a monster? Are monsters capable of emotions? Are they capable of feeling something? And so I thought it was really well done. I liked it a lot. I think that both of these episodes are an incredible way to start out the season. I'm going to just say right here, I think they nailed this season. It was better than I even expected it to be. All of my initial fears of what they might do were gone. You know, once I saw the first six episodes, I was just like, this is great. I will say it's not perfect. There are things that I will gripe about later, but it is really, really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The cast blew me away with some of their acting. So good for them. I feel like this is quite the accomplishment of Netflix and like the whole Witcher team. Like, they just did an incredible job.
It's a premiere. As I text you, I think it's like, this is like real prestige television. You know what I mean? Like, now at this point, like, I think, I don't know. I really like it. I really think that they did and the production value is great. And the storytelling, they made a lot of corrections that I think work. The acting has been really great. Speaking of acting, I do want to shout out Christopher Hivshue playing the Nevillian, my man Tormund. He did a great job. I thought he did. I thought like that scene, and to the point that when we went to we attended a Q&A screening of the first episode, and then Henry Cavill did a Q&A, and he talked about how much he wanted to work with him again, just based on the scene. You know, meeting him was great, and, you know, talking about, hey, let's do some work, but just in the way that they acted in that scene, how much he really felt the exchange there, and felt like, man, this guy is such a good actor, I want to do some more work with him. So I really wanted to just tip my cap to him, because I don't know if we'll see him again during the season, and I thought that he did a phenomenal job. So
yeah, I don't know if we're going to see him again on the show, but I also didn't think that we were going to see Dara again. And it's not a spoiler, because it's out there in like all of Netflix promotional stuff. Dara is back.
Dara's back.
I'm like, you know, I'm glad to see it. But he was, the whole thing was phenomenal. I mean, even just the practical effects, the makeup, it was just really, really good. It made me feel like the 2 year wait was worth it. And it kind of makes me sad to think we might have to wait another 2 years, because this is you know, they had a lot of delays because of COVID, because Henry Cavill got hurt. And they had to pause production, but I think this probably still would have taken close to 2 years too, just the production value and just the, like, the battlefield, like just creating all of these huge set pieces where you have a huge battlefield, then you're in Aretusa, then you're in Kaer Morhen, then you're in Sintra. Like, they're just really taking us all over the place, and it's great to see.
Yeah, I agree. And nailing a lot of detail with, like you said, the sets. And I mean, like, you know, Kaer Morhen looks brilliant. I love that.
It looks phenomenal. Yeah. It is exactly what I wanted to see. They really nailed it. So I'm really glad that they put the effort in. You can just sort of tell that the people who work on this show really love this source material. So that's also nice to see that they're fans as well.
Yeah, The Witcher himself, like, hit them up mad times, like, yo, you got to cast me. Yo, come on. I know I'm Superman, but please put me in this. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, Henry Cavill is like a super fan of this. Everyone just loves this world. And I don't know if I love this world because it's a hard world, right? But I love that they care about this story so much, because I think we're starting to see how rich it is and just how much there is to explore. I mean, there's a whole spinoff show. They had an animated movie. Like, there's just a lot of content here from this, like, fascinating, robust, very creative world that was created. So I'm glad it's in good hands. You know, sometimes you watch a show and you wish that some other you know, studio had taken it over, but they've just done a really great job with it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that'll do it for us, and we thank you guys so much for tuning in, checking out our coverage of episode 1 and 2 of The Witcher. Please go and leave reviews on any of the podcast platforms you listen on. You know, go ahead and hit us up at KinFolklorePod on Instagram and Twitter, and also Facebook. Join our Facebook group. We have a Facebook group, Kin Folklore Podcast. So we look forward to sharing the rest of this Witcher season with you, and thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.